welcome back to another episode of Gavin Jules Meets. This is part two of our conversation with Ben Davies.
Yeah.
Part one, we learned a little bit more about him, his worldview. I thought it was a fascinating conversation from a guy who I think is definitely an unusual footballer.
Yeah, definitely, Gav. This episode is different because it's more about the influences through his career, so the coaches that he had from Postecoglou, Conte, Mourinho, but also the players that he played with, the ones that he was close to, the ones maybe not so close to, but who impressed him, all of that. So be more about the pitch, but also who he played with and against.
That list, of course, includes guys like Harry Kane, Hongmin Son, and Gareth Bale. But we had to start with his current manager, Ange Postecoglou. You get a new manager in, and you've had 5-6 new managers at Spurs alone?
Yep.
And people always wonder, how's it going to work, blah, blah, blah. And it's fair to say Ange Postecoglou probably didn't have the CV of a Conte or a Mourinho before him. And you've done well. You've gotten a lot of plaudits this season. Does everything, just from a more of a footballer's perspective, how much do things change from one manager to the other in terms of training, day-to-day work?
Yeah, I think there's that unknown feeling you get as a player more than anything when a new manager comes in. You get a lot of text messages flying around, who's it going to be, who's going to come in. And we play the game just like everybody else. You see the news on the TV, or we wait until that announcement comes. And I think somebody like Ange Postecoglou was someone who stirred excitement within our team, because we knew the success he'd had at Celtic and the exciting brand of football we played. And I think that's what people wanted to get to at Spurs this season, was trying to play an exciting brand of football, an attacking brand of football, and hopefully start winning some games again. And yeah. And I think from day one, we saw in the training since he's come in, that's been the whole philosophy. It's been fast-paced. It's been everything with the ball. It's been dynamic. And I think we're enjoying what we're seeing out on the pitch.
Is there a bit of apprehension when you know there's a new guy coming? So if someone has been sacked, yeah, there'll be a replacement, or in the summer, because you just don't know and you're hoping that it's one that suits your style maybe, or you would rather a bigger name or not a bigger name, or someone that you've worked with before, or someone completely new. Is there a bit of that, or you just go along and wait for the club to decide?
Yeah, I think of course there's apprehension when a new manager comes in. You don't know what that manager thinks about you,
yeah,
ultimately. And it's important that on day one, you're going in there hoping that you're there to impress. I'm sure he came in knowing what he had in the team. It's not like we're an unknown bunch of players,
yeah,
but you don't know if you fit in his system, if you're in his plans going forward. So that feeling's always there, but I think that's why we have a pre-season. That's why we had that time with him to stake our claim for why we want to be part of his squad going forward. And it was a good preseason. We went away.
It was
intense. But as I said, it's all with the ball, and I think that's all professional players want to do.
It's a bit like when you meet a girl. It's just there's this. No, it's true. There's this time where you get to know each other, right? You individually, yeah, with the manager, and every player with the same, and then collectively as a group with that manager as well.
Hopefully not collectively with the girl.
No. I mean, you know what I mean. Like, just like, you
very
know,
open-minded.
It's like a date. You're dating and see if you like each other.
You're putting your best face forward, right?
Yeah, except you're under contract. It's more like an arranged marriage,
I know,
here,
but
right?
Still, Ben is right, though. Yeah. If the guy doesn't like you, then you need to get out of there.
But how does he, or, I mean, have they all been the same? Because I'm imagining, like, in a corporate structure, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if my department, if we were to get a new boss, he would come and he would meet with all of us,
yep,
collectively, and then meet with all of us individually and stuff. Is that what all your new managers have done? Have they said, all right, you know, do you like schedule a time and you go and you talk to him for 20 minutes, half an hour individually in addition to what you do? Is that seems pretty standard.
It seems standard, but that's not what I've ever experienced in football.
Really?
I've never experienced a manager coming in and having one-to-ones with everyone. I told this to a couple of friends and they were also surprised at that as well. But it's more a meeting as a collective, and And really, it came down to watching us on the training pitch. That's probably the first real interaction you get. We had meetings as a team of what was expected, what behaviours were expected, how you can be successful in my system. But there are no real one-on-ones where you'd, you know, air your concerns or ask where you stand. I think that's something that the manager will look at and make his decision probably over time.
So with Ange, from the beginning you felt this is going to be good, right?
Yeah, well, he comes in. He puts good training sessions on. Yeah. He speaks incredibly well. He gets you excited for the season ahead, and that's all you want as a player. You want to feel that excitement of what could lie ahead, and yeah, he put that into us straight away.
And with others, would have been maybe different from the beginning? You could see like, okay, this is going to be slightly different way of working than I had before, or the beginning is always a bit, everybody's nice, everybody's happy, everything, and it's maybe later down the road or you see like it's not as good as
I think. Every new manager coming in, you will have that feeling of of change.
Yeah.
And with that change comes that exciting feeling if you feel like you're going to be part of the plan.
So, yeah.
And thankfully, with all the managers that I've had at Spurs, I've had that feeling, and I've been lucky to work with some great guys that have come in at that club, and it's a big opportunity to learn. Yeah. We've had some of the best names in world football managers, so to even be a part of that, you have to sometimes take a step back and be appreciative of who you've worked under.
Yeah.
I want to move on from Ange, but I have to ask you this, because this is something you've told me before, which I didn't know, which blew me away about him. Most managers have their posse of assistants, especially some of the guys who've managed Spurs. I'm thinking specifically of Pochettino and Conte. You know, somebody like Mourinho, maybe in some ways a victim of his success, because you'll have a group of assistants and then, you know, they want to branch out on their own. Villas-Boas leaves, Rui-Fire leaves, so you replace them with other people. But, you know, these other guys have like a tight-knit posse of people who are around him, who know their methods, who, you know, sit around, hang out with him. Ange does not. He has a bunch of assistants at Celtic, maybe he had other people before. Comes to you guys, and not only is his impact with you new, but his impact with most of his staff is new. That seems really counterintuitive. And again, to tie it back to the corporate word, in case some big corporation wants to, in case Accenture, in case you want to sponsor us. No, but most people, right, when they move from one corporation to one company to the other, they have their trusted lieutenants who they bring along. And was that weird for you? Had you experienced that before?
I'd never experienced that before. It was unusual. And, you know, we had a whole new coaching department come in as well. We had Brian Mason and Matt Wells, who had been there before.
But you knew those guys at least.
So we knew those guys, right. But he also brought in Mile Jedina, Chris Davis.
Yeah.
And Mile played under Ange, but had never
coached under him.
And so Chris was completely separate. So, yeah, it was unusual for us, but...
And he'd never worked with Wells or Mason either,
no,
right?
No, but what was really impressive is from day one, his message was clear, his values were very clear, and it flowed perfectly. The training was very good, overseen by the manager, and to this day, I think it's worked very well. His voice is final, and you know that we're all following what he believes in, but it keeps everybody on their toes. I think it keeps the coaches on their toes as well. They're there to work hard and to put their best shoe forward, because they're a team within a team, if that makes sense.
Right.
So but it's very different to what I've experienced before.
Yeah, I was going to say,
all
how
the
different?
Coaches I've had have all had people who maybe have learned structure or system, maybe have a one message that, you know, may have taken 3-4 years of time working together just to, so that the manager will trust them to be able to deliver that. But it's been very unusual, but it's been very successful. I think, you know, I look into coaching after I finish football, and I'm not sure I would have the confidence to go into somewhere alone. It's impressive.
Is that because he's so confident in himself and he's and his ability to read people, and or does he like, do you think, I mean, I know you're probably not in these meetings, but one of the risks if you have the same people around you all the time is, for example, Mourinho, as you may have heard, just got let go by Roma, and with him his staff. And, you know, Mourinho and his staff cost Roma about 19 million euros a season, right? So you have all these people who are Mourinho loyalists who are now leaving. I wonder, when you've got a tight-knit staff, you can sometimes get a bunch of yes men. Not yes men, but, like, you know, when they're so dependent on you, you know, you're the star, you're the manager. On the other hand, you have a uniformity of message, right? They know you, they know your good moment, you know. With Ange, like, does he bring these guys in saying, like, oh, well, these guys don't have any loyalty to me, just they have loyalty to their job, so they can contradict me. They can say, Ange, that's stupid, and here's why. And then we have a discussion, it's my decision, but I welcome that dialogue. I mean, do you think it's that, or you not? I guess you wouldn't know.
Look, I don't know, right. But so far it seems to be working. Right. I think having... For this is not necessarily directly for Spurs, but not having that staff that follows you everywhere, I guess it probably stops the level, any level of complacency seeping in as well.
Right.
I think, you know, you could. It's sometimes difficult if you're with a group for 10, 15 years or your whole career. You know, there might be times where it's hard to say to someone, this is wrong. This is not how you do it.
Right.
Whereas if you have people who have come in working for you and maybe you have more right or more leadership to be able to say that kind of stuff, but it's definitely interesting.
And in terms of his methods then, what's the biggest difference that you saw? What is his philosophy, or what, how could you sum up everything that he brought so far in the space of, what, let's say 6 months?
Yeah, I think we probably forget that it's only been six months that he's been with us. He's implemented a style of play and a philosophy into us very quickly. But really, this philosophy is just, we want to have the ball at every opportunity we can, and we want to not dally on the ball. We're not keeping the ball for the sake of it. Yeah. We're keeping the ball to create opportunities, and probably pulling those extra guys inside, like we've played with the fullbacks inside, has more bodies in there, gives you more options to play the pass, and gives you an opportunity to get it to the forward players as quickly as possible. And this season, that dynamism we've had in midfield, the rotations, we've had fullbacks playing up front in games. It works when everybody's brave, and he gives us that courage to just play at all costs. If you give the ball away, if you make a technical mistake, it's not a problem. It's going to happen. You can concede a goal from a bad pass, for example, but the way that I see it is, you can also concede a goal from getting a free kick, smashing it long, team wins a header, and they've gone and scored because everybody's spread out. So,
but then nobody calls you naive when that
nobody
happens.
Nobody calls you naive. But if you look at the amount of goal, if you're taking a goal kick, this is how I would interpret it. If you're taking a goal kick, everybody's spread out, we've gone just smashed it long. The argument would be that the team that's most likely to score is the team that isn't taking the goal kick. Yeah. You're not going to score from back here by smashing it long and then a flick on and then you've ran past three or four people. You probably expect that the chances are a big centre half's going to come and head the ball. It could land at the striker. He can score straight away. So if you're going to take those risks, why not take risks and try to do something that's going to give you the opportunity to score at the other end?
And was that easy to implement? Because he explains it so well and he gives you that confidence, extra, is it easy, or was it still complicated for you or others to actually understand where your position should be when the ball is there? When we move forward like that, I have to be here. I guess especially more for the fullbacks, maybe.
Yeah.
So for Pedro to come inside a lot. I mean, Maddison, I think, was helping everybody, to be fair, seeing how good he was. But was it easy in the end, or it took a bit of time still?
Look, there were games where you maybe were a bit rigid in pre-season, just trying to figure out kind of how far to take it. You know, as a fullback, do you really want to go over to the other side of the pitch to receive the ball? Well, if this is all new to most people, you'd feel like you're leaving your position. But, you know, after every game we'd review it, after training sessions we would review it, and you saw the good actions that were being shown usually were when players were completely free. You'd see a fullback find a position that was completely different to what you'd see from probably any other fullback in the league, or you'd see Maddison dropping into a left back position. And the fact that that was all encouraged, I think over time people realized, then I'm actually free to go anywhere here. There's maybe two or three players in this team that are pretty stuck in their positions. Your two wingers need to be high and wide to be able to pin their fullbacks.
So that's what you ask of them?
Yep.
Okay.
Because they're, you see in our system, they don't change. Yeah. They're always there. They're on the last line. And probably your centre-backs, because you can't really be going wherever you want for obvious reasons. So, but that rest of the midfield five that play in there, go wherever you want. Rotate as much as you want, because it's about creating challenges for the opposition.
Yeah.
If you're the opposite winger, usually you look in your vision, you see a fullback there. Can you make it difficult for him to defend? And we played games. I think we played in City and earlier in the season, and there was a time in the game where we had Pedro and Destiny were basically like two number tens, two strikers even, and the people marking them were Foden and Doku.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, like, because Diaz had gone and followed our striker, because the other centre back had jumped in and followed here, it meant that, you know, if you stop the frame right there, you're playing two attacking fullbacks against two wingers, 2v2. And those are the kind of situations you want to try and create.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because when you start moving players to different situations, right, you create mismatches and things that you wouldn't expect. And I'm going to chuck this at you. I don't expect you to know this. One of your teammates is one of the five most fouled players in the Premier League this season. And among guys who've played a certain number of minutes, obviously. Do you want to guess who it is? I'll give you a hint.
James Maddison?
It's not one of your forwards. It's not one of your midfielders.
Then I don't know.
It's Emerson.
Oh, really?
He's the only defender in the top 10, yeah. And I was wondering about, especially, and he's had to play center back half the year, right? So I'm like, how often do you get fouled, if not for the fact that you have this fluidity, so maybe he feels encouraged to take on people, because that's generally when you get fouled, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, that one surprised me.
Yeah. The guys who are, no, seriously, I'll send you the list, because, I mean, the guys are first, you know, it's the people you expect. It's like, you know, Doku and Jordan Ayew, for example, whatever, right? But when I saw that, I was really surprised, and it's kind of, I guess it's one reflection of the way you're playing this year.
Yeah, look, I've played a lot of centre-back as well, and the reality is you're expected to sometimes stay on the ball until the options come, and if for some reason the options aren't available to you there, rather than the age-old easy thing to do for a centre-back would be to get out of your feet and clip it down the line, well, that's not benefiting anything for the way we want to play. So if you have to take a risk and try and dribble, try and win a foul.
I see. This is where it's going.
Then sometimes the winning a foul, stopping, plays right position, quick play, you go again.
Can you talk to us a little bit about Poch? What he meant to you for your career? What made him special at the time, especially at Spurs? Like, you know, all of that, all the things maybe we didn't know from just watching outside or analysing the games.
Yeah, I think he was one of the big reasons I signed for Tottenham. I'd met him. He'd explained his vision in pretty broken English at the time, you could get the feeling of what he wanted to do.
Was it broken English? We stopped when he was at Southampton. He was pretending not to speak English, and so he needing that translator. But
no, I think
it wasn't.
He was learning.
Yeah, right.
I understand why he did it. I don't think if I went to Spain and I'd have to try and have a go, then I'm sure I'd be using the translator if I could. Right. So he was a big reason why I went there, and he really had a vision. And looking back at it now, not many, you know, as a manager, you don't know how long you're going to get now. You could be there a couple of months, but this was a semi-long-term vision of how he wanted the club to play, where he expected me to fit in that team, and where we were going to go. And I think it was a big difference from where I was at Swansea, and the way we trained, the professionalism that he brought in, the demands he put on players. It was a change of lifestyle more than anything. This was someone who cared what you did at home.
Yeah,
found out what you did at home.
Really,
it was intense, but exactly what you needed to do to be a professional footballer, and he introduced proper gym work, not heavy weights, but stuff that was related to football. The training was intense, it was sharp, it was 2v2s, 3v3s, it had certain days, but it was all blocked, it was very well managed. And I think that season we were so confident in the way we were playing. Maybe not the first season, but the second season, when everything came to fruition.
Yeah.
We were going into games knowing we'd won before we turned up.
Really?
Yeah, it felt very easy at times. And this wasn't, you know, a manager went in-depth tactically about the opposition. There were loads of games where we went into games, no meetings on the opposition. Literally 3 hours before, when we arrived at the stadium, there'd be a short meeting. This is who we're up against. This is their set pieces. And this is how we play. Which
really?
Didn't really change, but it's all about us.
The emphasis was on
we
you,
were the
yeah.
focus. It wasn't an opposition-focused mentality. And we were going into games. We knew each other like the back of our hands. It felt very easy at times.
On the back of that question, Dele Alli,
mm-hmm.
like the Ben Davies that played with Dele Alli, that was a magician those seasons, really, because we don't need to talk about what happened to him now, and it's a sad story, but we don't know what happened. I'm not sure if you do. So anyway, let's focus on when he was actually really good.
Yeah.
Could you see him when he arrived? So he arrived from Milton Keynes.
Mm-hmm.
Could you see that development in him, and him going from this talented, promising kid to this outstanding, one of the best in the league kind of player?
Dele was incredible when he turned up. He was a young kid from Milton Keynes, and he got thrown into first team training, and he would just do stuff. It was like playing for fun. And I think to start with, the management, the staff probably were like, "What's this kid doing? Like, play properly, get the ball, play here." Like, he was playing.
Because what was he doing? Like, he was just.
He was just like, ball comes to feet, step over it, tries to go through other people's legs. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Trying to flick the ball. And at this time, remember, he was playing as a six. He was like a CDM. Like, he'd fly into tackles in training, and you'd get some boys be like, "Relax." But then we went, pre-season again, played against Real Madrid, and it was the Dele show from that. And this was a kid who'd. There was no difference in level of opposition. That's probably the best way I'd describe it. What he did in League One, he would try and do against Modric, against Cruz, these guys. It was irrelevant who he was playing against. He had the self-confidence. And I think he's spoken about it, which is like the bravery. It doesn't mean he wasn't nervous about trying these things, but he had the bravery to try it. And that never went away from him. And when he... That season when he just was breaking through, scoring goals for fun.
God, the one at Palace. Remember the one at Palace
goals.
When he chased the ball and then goes...
Who even tries that?
That's
the reality. And that's what he was doing. It was insane. But big thing that I think we didn't appreciate at the time was how good off the ball he was for us.
Yeah.
If you watch those games back, man, our team couldn't press without Dele.
Yeah.
He was hounding the goalkeeper, hounding the centre-back, hounding the centre midfielders. He was dropping back, winning tackles. And... I've said it to him many times. I'd love to see him go back to playing a bit deeper, playing as a six. Go back, take the pressure of trying to get assists or goals out of your game, and go back being that tough, tackling, hungry young kid who's winning the ball. Like, he's still incredibly fit.
He
could run all day. He used to run more than anybody. He'd have the summer of doing nothing, come back for preseason to be the fittest guy. He'd win every fitness test. And I'd love to see him get back in that role.
But did you think he could become one of the best in the world? Did you think after those seasons that, like, there's no limit for him?
There was no limit for him. He could have, at that time, been similar to, like, a Bellingham kind of player.
Yeah.
Now, someone who maybe not technically as good as Jude is, but ultimately the game comes down to scoring goals.
Yeah,
and Dele used to find a way to score and assist pretty much every game. And he used to just... cause nightmares for opposition midfield. I remember speaking to Joe Allen at Wales camp, and him being like, "Dele just didn't stop running. He was like, he was horrible to play against, because one minute he was here and the next minute he's already 20 yards away from me, and I don't know whether I should follow him. I get the ball, I think I'm free, and Dele's already on me." It was just a guy who just never stopped.
I don't think we appreciated enough the Dele Alli because of everything that happened after, which again is sad, but I don't think people gave him enough credit for being that good so young at that time.
He's got 50 Premier League goals.
Yeah.
There are some midfielders we talk about now as having incredible careers that are nowhere near those numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not saying the game just ultimately comes down to numbers, your performance, but what he did in that period was insane.
I wanted to ask you, actually, just broadly using, wearing your coaching hat now.
Mm-hmm.
Admittedly, you never, I guess, you were like 14 in the youth team when Swansea were in League One, right? Yeah. So, like, your knowledge of that level. But as you were talking about Dele Alli, I kind of thought about players making the jump from. It's rare enough to see players from the Championship making the jump to a top six or top eight team. You don't. I mean, I don't know if you're encyclopedic. You'll probably mention three guys in a minute, but like, it's very, very rare. Do you have any idea? Is it because we're actually really good at spotting talent and Dele Alli's just the one who kind of got away and was at that level? Or there's always another story behind it, like Jamie Vardy or whatever. Or is it that clubs just don't look there and maybe if they did, they would find the talent? Or is it almost a different sport at that level? Bearing in mind that you also play with League One guys.
I was going to say,
Wales.
That would be my point. I play with quite a lot of my teammates in the Wales squad that play Championship and below. And let me tell you, there's a lot of talent there. I think we've got so much talent within the football pyramid but it's not flashy. You know, if you're a club and you sign a player from the Championship to come and be your star man next season, how are the fans reacting to that? And I think it's much easier to spend 15 million, 20 million on a striker and say, okay, this is who we're hanging our hat on, rather than giving a guy a go. I do understand that comes with risk, whether he can make that step up to the next league. But I think that if you do take the time and look down the pyramid, especially in the Championship at the top end, there's some brilliant players.
Tony Watkins, there's a few. Yeah.
Shea Adams has done it at the Premier League level, played Sheffield in Birmingham. You know, there's good players down there. There's some very, very good players that may go their whole career not having the opportunity to play in the Premier League. But there are good.
You had some pretty high-profile managers after that, Antonio Conte and Jose Mourinho. And I was actually thinking, those are two of the most polarizing, most kind of visible managers. People always have an opinion on them, and they're like, oh, he always does this. He's always like this. He's always like that. Whereas when Pochettino arrived, you know, he's become a big manager now, but at the time, you know, he was a guy from Southampton and Espanyol and whatever. Whereas when these guys walked in, they were already established. Did that change the dynamic a little? Because when you had Brendan before, he was kind of relatively unknown. Mm-hmm. Laudrup had never worked in this country. Is it a different dynamic when they walk in? Do you get the sense that they actually...
Is Jose walked in and said, like, yeah.
It's a different dynamic.
And also, they represent big investments for the club as well. So inevitably, if I'm a club and I'm going to invest in a Conte or a Mourinho, I'm going to give them a lot of... I'm going to give them support because I'm stupid not to.
Yep. The Jose one was my first experience, and it was during international break, and I remember I walked off the pitch and I got a text being, Jose's in, new manager. And it was a shock to us. We'd been with Pochettino for 5 years. He was, you know, the figurehead of the club. He was in control of most things. And I remember getting told, I think we'd just qualified that night for the Euros actually with Wales, but I had to get back for the next day. Jose was there. And that first meeting, he basically just read the rights to us that, you guys, you might think you're good, but you're not necessarily as good as you think you are. And this is Jose. Jose's voice carries, you know. It's the guy we've grown up listening to on the TV. We obviously knew that he played a more physical, and more. We had guys completely nervous about their size. I'm going to put a rain jacket on so they think I'm bigger. This level was crazy, right?
Wait, players actually think that way.
There's some fear.
Of course. There's the apprehension, the fear of, you know, and a new manager needs to like me to play me.
No, but also just the size thing. Because, I mean, that was a thing with Jose many years ago. But players actually think, oh, you have to be at least like 6 foot tall to play. Or
whatever. I'm not in every player's head, but I'm sure it was a thought.
Yeah,
and
I would agree.
So,
definitely.
Firstly, you're in there. Jose is such a big presence around the place. You hear his voice coming down the corridor. You sit in the meeting. We go straight out to train. We've got a game 2 days later, so we do some sort of passing drill. But what's different is straight away he wanted to engage with everyone. no filter, would tell people, you've seen in the documentary where he's like, no filter, tell people everything. He said to me, I came back from where, he's like, did you have some beers last night about qualifying? And I was like, no, I had to drive back to come here. And he's like, ah, okay, whatever. He's like, next time. But we short build up. He basically is honest with us, I don't know really what I'm team, but I haven't watched you. This is the team I want to go with tomorrow. I feel bad that I have to leave people out the squad without really seeing you or anything, but this is what I'm going to do. And I was in that starting 11. We played West Ham away. We were on a bit of a bad run, and we went to West Ham and we crushed them. We played some amazing football.
Yeah, I remember that.
I played in a back four, but was expected to play inside as a kind of server with the ball, play forward, which for me suited me down to the ground. So instantly I'm thinking, okay, this is where I'd want to be. And I was playing really well, like playing very well, enjoying it. And 60, 70 minutes, tried to make a tackle, foot got caught underneath me, and I've injured my ankle badly. So I come off, I'm gutted, because I know it's something semi-serious, and I've just started the first game playing well. It happens. So I'm at home on the sofa watching TV, feeling sorry for myself, ice is on the foot, whatever. And my phone starts ringing. And I'm like, it's an unknown number, a FaceTime from an unknown number. I'm like, who is this? So I answer, and it's Jose. And the reality is, like, we'd never had that level of communication with Pochettino.
Because he just arrived. Yeah,
but he just arrived, and he's on FaceTime with me. he's sat at home in an office, glasses on, and his first words, are you and I was like, yeah, I think I am. And he was like, this is how I wanted to go. But even to have that level of engagement with someone of his like presence and stature, someone I'd always looked up to as a guy in world football, it was really quite cool, really quite humbling, really. So I have to say he was brilliant with me. I was injured for 3 months, 3 to 4 months with an ankle injury, and he kept me involved. He was always in contact with me, and it's pretty easy. Look, the injured guys, if you're out for 3 months, then you don't always feel like part of it.
Yeah.
But he was brilliant with me. Kept a complete like conversation and dialogue with me the whole way through. Was desperate to get me back, and I have nothing but praise for that man.
He's certainly somebody who goes out of his way to build that individual relationship.
The man management, he was incredible. And look, I probably don't speak for everyone because we do know that he has fallen out with people over time. But for me, from a personal point of view, I loved it.
He once told me when you spoke to him for the book I wrote many years ago with Gianluca Vialli, he said, like, the key to man management is just knowing the person you're talking to. Because, and here's two players from yesteryear. I can go to John Terry and say, hey, you're a bad word, you let the team down, you suck, I should get rid of you. And then he'll respond to that by working harder. If I say that to William Gallus, he's going to punch me in the face and leave the team. Looking forward to when you become a coach, do you see yourself talking differently to different people based on their personalities? Or is that not you, because you couldn't do the macho Mourinho, like, hey, you...
I don't know for myself.
You're all about positive reinforcement?
Yeah.
There's a time and a place for when someone needs to be told. But I think he was very smart with it. He knew what was going to get people going. I think with me personally, he knew that he didn't need to hold anything back. He could be honest with me and I would do what was expected. That's my character, that's how I am, and I think that's probably why he respected me. It was because ultimately he's my manager, I work for you, you're like, that's whatever you want I will do for this team. And we had a good relationship, and we still speak now because of it. But you know, that worked for some players, didn't work for others, and I think that probably in the end was what went wrong at the club.
I was going to ask you, what do you think went wrong then? Because he could have worked well. He was a winner, certainly on the short term. He could have brought success to this club. And in the end, there was clearly something missing.
Yeah, we had it always goes, but we were top of the league in December, and we played Liverpool away. We were 1-0 up. We played at the time the perfect game. We were solid, we had chances, we missed a couple of big one-on-ones, and we conceded a set piece in like the 90th minute, drew 1-1, and from then on that was our top at Christmas moment. And I think then it was like we were chasing results, we were chasing people, and it became a little bit difficult, that's all. And I remember I was injured actually building up to the cup final, and I missed it, and the club chose to change the manager before that.
I mean, after Jose Nuno came, and I don't know if you know, if I can tell you, but Hugo is a very good friend of mine, and this week is going to be cut, but from day one Hugo said, listen, I don't think this is going to work. So I'm not asking you to throw Nuno under the bus. I'm just saying that from what I heard very, very early on, it was just not going to work. So I don't know if you learn a bit from Nuno, or if you had whatever you can tell us, but it felt like, well, sometimes you get some right, sometimes you get some wrong as a, you know, to appoint a manager, and this one felt like...
Yeah, look, I think the same thing for me again. New manager comes in, it's about trying to show your best self, give what you can to the team, and hopefully you're playing. And Nuno clearly wasn't my biggest fan. I think I started one game just before he left the club, so... Yeah. Look, that was probably the one period where I didn't play any games for a while, but thankfully for me, from personal level, it was...
Did you have any explanation?
Eight games.
Did you understand?
No.
Did you know?
I thought I was training well. I thought I was doing well week in, week out, and then I just got dropped in for one game, and it was the last game before he left. Yeah. So look, from my point of view, I think, as we've said so far, some work out, some don't, and it was someone that didn't really fancy me at that time, and that's okay. Football's a game of opinions. I still was very professional. I still gave my all. I was still ready to play if I was called upon, but it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Business picked up pretty quickly with the next manager after that.
Business did pick up very quickly,
It also felt from the outside that, you know, and also it happens when you're losing, and obviously you get... Everything seemed kind of slightly depressing and kind of lower energy, and then certainly, again, from the outside... Conte, something in his first seasons, is viewed as kind of like the live wire who, like...
Yeah, he came in and he changed the place instantly. It was all of a sudden, we didn't have a choice not to be energized. He came in and he was intense. From day one, we were working on our tactical shape, one we hadn't really played before. I remember we had a meeting. Everybody's names are on the whiteboard. My name's in two positions, left wing back, left centre back. And he was like, we'll go outside, we'll work on this, and we'll see who fits where, whatever. And again, a similar type of thing. 2 days before a game, he came in and we had to do it. And I was on the pitch, and I remember saying to him, look, I think I'd played there for Wales a lot and really like playing there. I was like, I can be third centre back in this system. I like playing centre back, I know how to do it. And he was like, yeah, trust me, I know that. He's like, I'd like to see you like... And Azpilicueta, the type of player for me who was, you know, reliable, can do the job. From that moment, I think I played every game that year for him. So, as we said, football's a game of opinions. And look, that he came in and, wow, he changed our team instantly. We were, not only were we solid, but we were scoring goals. We were dominating games, and in a system that was very similar to how we used to play at Chelsea, but it worked. For that period, and end of the season, we beat Norwich. I think the last day it was a similar type of feeling to that Pochettino feeling where you're going on the pitch knowing you're winning today.
Really, it was that.
Yeah. We got that so ingrained in a system that we knew was going to work. We felt confident. It was it was a winning.
This is where
team.
An Arsenal fan would crack a stupid joke and say, "Oh, you forgot that you were Spurs." Like, But
no, but you were fighting with them for that obviously top four.
Yeah,
finish.
We had that big game at home where it was where we won 3-0, I think. Yeah. And obviously the 10 men situation helped us that game, but it was that same thing. We kind of were in a build up to that Arsenal game, knowing that, okay, we win this, we'll get Champions League, and we went on this run, and we were so confident with Conte at that moment that we knew we were going into that game. We felt like, yeah, okay, we'll get this done tonight.
In terms of tactical aspect of the game, was it the one that worked you out the most? Do you personally, but collectively, more than Poch, more than Jose,
more than low drip. He's incredibly tactically driven. I think every game we'd work for 3-4 days on our tactics, on our formation, how the opposition are going to attack us, how we want to attack, different roles, different players. And he was a genius when it came to that. He'd stand in the middle of the pitch, take every training session, and be able to see every movement. He was an expert when it came to that formation and that style. And now that I'm doing my coaching, seeing what he was able to do in the middle of the pitch and the actions on the right side of the pitch and him being able to tell the left wing back or the left defender where you went wrong. He had eyes in the back of his head. Really? It was amazing to see. And in that system, everyone knew exactly what was expected of them.
You said the intensity. Was it the same intensity that Poch had, that Jose had, or slightly different in the sense that, I don't know, I mean, I don't know if you can have different intensities, but
can.
Can you?
Yeah. I think with Poch, it was the whole week was intense. You train how you play. That's the level we're going to hit every single day, whereas Jose was like, why waste our energy before we play the big game on the weekend? I want everybody fresh. If people are on different injury protocol schedules throughout the week, if people need to do different things to get ready for the game, this is how we do it.
And Conte was a bit of a mix of the two?
Conte was a bit of the mix of the two. That's probably a good way to put it. I think we used to train very hard and we were very fit. We used to do a lot of running without the ball, but not to that intensity that Pochettino was. Maybe 1 hour, tough session, crazy session, and then you're done. Conte could be a very long session, but very tactical driven and also very fitness driven. Yeah. We do a lot of kilometers under him.
Really?
Yeah.
Jules, that idea of Conte sitting in the middle or standing in the middle of the pitch and having this weird 360 degree vision, that's come up before. You know why? It's because Conte doesn't have, not only does he not have normal hair, he doesn't have normal eyes either. He's like those, you know those flies where they've got like the eyes that bulge out and he can see behind. He doesn't have eyes on the back of his head. Incredible. Or maybe he does, hidden under the very natural hair. Anyway, I thought that was a fascinating bit of conversation. And we also had to ask him, he's played with three absolute superstar freaks of nature. And how do you relate to people like that? And so we went there. Massimo Mauro was a very gifted player in the 1980s. He kind of wrote a book about playing with three geniuses, as he put it. And in his case, it was Zico, Michel Platini, and Diego Maradona. These are the three teammates that he had, and he started with some whatever. You played with Gareth Bale, Harry Kane, and Hongmin Son. And before people, trolls come out, please, I'm not saying that Sonny is the same as Maradona or the Harry Kane, you know, but whatever.
Yeah.
But this is something.
Would they be your three top?
Yeah.
I'm curious about that because you talked about your evolution as a player. You're also somebody who, I think anybody's seen you play, you try to think a lot. And you're always athletically prepared. Like, those are the two things that, you know, you can control, right? You may not be a sprinter. You may not have the touch of Gareth Bale. But, you know, you can improve in that. But, like, the other stuff.
But I'm not Gareth Bale, Harry Kane, or Tom Wilson.
Exactly.
That's fair.
Don't
beat around the bush.
Not yet. You're only 30. Not yet.
Hang on.
Is there anything these three have in common, other than being very gifted at the game of football? Because we often talk about it, right? About that sort of winning mentality. Michael Jordan, blah, 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 hates to lose. Viewed from the outside, not knowing them, and I'm not going to go down the Gareth Bale golf stereotype or whatever, but viewed from the outside, they strike me as people who view defeat, contrary to people who hate losing and go demented when they lose, like perhaps Antonio Conte, right? They strike me as kind of people who, like, if they lose, if they suffer a setback, for example, they say, I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to come back better. I'm going to analyze myself. View from the outside. That's my view. Am I wrong? Or like, none of these people seem like egomaniacs, first of all.
They're not egomaniacs. And to be honest, all three of them, they're great people aside from the football. And I think one thing, maybe it's not the self-analysis after a defeat. It's the mindset of, I'm going to change this. It's not the, you know, a lot of us would look at our games, where can we improve, where can we do this? They would take the game by the scruff of the neck. And the next one they're on the field, it's me that can change the outcome of the next one. And we saw that time and time again when I played with Gareth for Wales, the amount of times he's gotten us out of a hole. It's not, let's wait for someone else or the team to play well to do this. He's like, just give me the ball, I'll do it.
But this is also recognition of the ability. Because if you, I mean, I say it with the greatest respect, if you or Chris Gunter said, oh wait, let me dribble five guys, let me shoot from the halfway line and score, like Chris Coleman would be like, all right, guys, all right, enough,
come on,
right?
Off we come.
So there's some level of these people are very aware of their ability and what they can do.
I think so, yes. But I don't think that ego plays out in the sense that it's every time, give me the ball. There's never any criticism of teammates for not being good enough. It's just a, I'm going to help the team the best way that I can by being the best player. Does that make sense? It's a bit weird, but in the sense of like, they all have so much ability, and all of it is, it's worked on. You know, they obviously have natural ability, but these guys are the ones who you see shooting every single day after training. And it's no coincidence when you see Sonny cutting in from the right and whipping it in the top corner that he's just done that. He's been practicing that every day after training since I've known him.
So these three are also among the hardest trainers that you've played
some
with?
Some of the hardest. I could put maybe Gareth. Gareth wouldn't mind me saying he's not the hardest trainer.
Right. But the other two.
When it comes to the skills and the actual, the practice of the skills, the being like the shooting or the crossing or the free kicks, like Gareth was one of the hardest workers.
When I look at this trio, just thinking of it as a trio, again, viewed from the outside, I would say Son is a phenomenal athlete. I would say Gareth Bale is a phenomenal athlete. Kane does not jump out at me as somebody who is, obviously, he's a very good athlete, but he's not somebody whose athleticism is the main driver. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Harry is incredibly strong and, like, deceptively strong. You don't see many people ever really knock him off balance on the pitch. He's
But if there's a decathlon and it's Kane and Gareth Bale, I'm going to pick Gareth Bale.
Me too. Right? I don't think that's fair, but Gareth is a freak of an athlete. That guy is so fast. He could just kick it past anybody and get the other side. But these guys, so driven, real down-to-earth team players. That's a big thing that comes into it. I think they all know that you can't do it all alone. That's the reality of football. You've seen so many teams where you've got one player who's exceptional and it doesn't work because he tries to do everything. They've all bought into the team side of the game. Maybe they get the rewards for the goals or the assists or whatever, but ultimately they know the team is important as well, and they've all shown how important the other side of the game is. When you see Gareth playing for Wales, he works his nuts off defensively. Yeah. He's at every corner winning the ball. He's in the wall trying to stop everything. Harry's exactly the same off the ball. Sonny's back sometimes playing left back, chasing back. And they're all honest players that want the best for the team. And like I said, they're exceptional players and they can sometimes take that team to the next level.
Grow as well. Mm-hmm. So the Gareth before Real Madrid and Gareth at Real Madrid, who wins all those Champions League, for example, is a better footballer for it. Even the criticism must have made him stronger, to be fair.
Yeah, look, some of the stuff that Gareth used to tell us about Real Madrid is enough for some people to never want to play football again.
Really?
But for him, it was water off duck's back. He was able to, I don't know how he was able to do it, but he was able to brush it off. Full belief in his ability, full knowledge that I can still do it, still a good player. If they don't like me, that's their problem.
That's crazy. Harry, from a number nine, the clinical finisher that you saw, became maybe the best number nine and number 10 in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Because the goals are great and there's a lot of top goal scorers, but to be the goal, that number nine, but also being able to be so creative with the ball when dropping deeper is mad.
That was something he seemed to just pick up. That didn't seem like it was there. That was not the thing you saw when you as a young player, but when with Mourinho, and some of the passing, it was like a quarterback playing, and he was dropping deep, picking the long balls out. Incredible, incredible football player. Someone to develop a game in that way is insane.
And Sonny coming from Germany, and again, you know, maybe the start was just getting used to this league and the culture, the language, which must have been a big barrier for him compared to the other two, to finish Premier League top goal scorer. And to be the player that he's become now must have been incredible to witness, even.
Yeah, Sonny's one of my best friends in the team. We've played together for ages. He's the godfather of my son. He is the man. But he is, you know, he's worked. Yeah. Like, if you probably look at the other two, they were both so natural. Like Harry could strike a ball. I'm not saying Harry didn't work when he finished, like I said, finishing every day, hitting it. But Sonny, from day one, the technical aspect, working with his dad as a kid, yeah. When he arrived at Spurs, it was left foot, right foot, gym work. His whole life is dedicated to football. And if anybody deserves the success he's having, it's him, purely because of that effort that he puts in. Mm. His life is dedicated. He has a whole country that, like, the pressure behind him to perform every single week is insane. Yeah. But he turns up and he's really thriving this year, I think, as captain of the team. He's got that responsibility. He's one of the hardest workers in training every day. And look, what an incredible player. Yeah. The goals, the left foot, right foot, insane.
No, I was going to say, so them three are in your... five-a-side, but I hate five-a-side. This is not football. It's for you English people. You shoot from the halfway line. You shoot from your own goal. It's not for me. I'm a purist. So I'll have a seven-a-side team, okay?
Oh, wow.
Okay. It's better. So in goal, I really expect my boy Hugo Lloris, but it's your choice.
Hugo gets in there. Yes. Come on, he's played there for years with me behind him. I'll put him in there. He's the cat.
What kind of relationship you had with him? What could you say about Hugo?
Hugo is just... another one of those guys who, when I arrived, was like a mentor. That he was the club captain and led the team for 10 years until he left now. And he was just a calm guy. He wasn't a shouter, he wasn't a screamer, he wasn't a guy who used to take over the dressing room with his personality, but a real, you know, performer week in, week out. And some of the saves, you would just turn around expecting the net to ripple and... somehow he'd get there.
I agree.
We'll let Ben, since he's taking his coaching badges, decide the formation.
Oh, I know, it's 2-1-3.
Yeah, just
2-1-3. Yeah, 2-1-3. So we have a back three two. Attackers. I'll put you in my back two, your back two.
All right, I can tag along to the boys right there.
So I need another defender, please.
Another defender. Who am I going to put? I'm going to go. It's not ideal for the... actually... I would pick another. I'm going to put Jan Vertonghen in there.
Nice.
So left foot, but Jan was...
You're going to make him play on the right, yeah?
Yeah, well...
He can play.
I don't know. He can play anyway. He was so good. He was an incredible footballer. With the ball, some of the stuff... He's like a midfielder. He was so creative. In training, he'd pull off skills and stuff that you wouldn't believe. But just a real good guy to have in your team. Brilliant on the ball. Solid defensively. I like Jan.
So you have one midfielder, obviously... and we know the front three, so really it's him. And you can go attacking mid, defensive mid. You can have a Dembele, you can have a Dele there. You can have whoever you want, Allen.
I'm going to put Christian Eriksen in there.
Ah, nice.
I think we talked about him earlier. The same thing I said, he's the manager on the pitch, dictates the tempo, runs the game. Incredible right foot. Christian's in the middle.
Perfect. So then, obviously, Bale, Kane and Son, which is a pretty,
pretty
strong
three.
On your bench. Not that we want to, you know, put.
And you've managed to only pick Spurs players so far, by the way.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Well, I have been there. I have been there for 10 years. To be fair.
Yeah, but I guess Joe Allen would be on the bench.
Joey Alves. I might put Laudrup on the bench as a player. He could probably turn up and play that guy.
That's a lovely team, man. And who's your manager then? It could be Cookie Coleman, to be fair, but.
Cookie Coleman. Yeah, go on. Oh, Cookie Coleman.
He's going to love that.
The Welsh hero.
Lovely. Thank you for listening, guys. I mean, we loved it. We love Ben Davies anyway, but we love the conversation. We hope that you loved it as well. Everything, all the insight that he gave us, all his reflections as well on the game. On
the whole
people.
Thing when he describes in a... Ange's game plan, in detail. I don't know. He's like an advanced scout for the opposing team.
And you know, I also love when he talks about Kane, Bale, and Son, because you know that question that you ask all the players that we meet or we talk to about when was the first time that they realized they were not the best in their team. And I think if we ask Kane, or if we ask Son or Bale, or even bigger names, there might be a point where. It's like, well, never. I've always been the best kind of thing. And with Ben, I just love that he felt so privileged, I think, in a way of playing with those guys and be friends with them as well. Not just playing, you can play in the same team, but not being friends. But for him to have got that relationship with them is pretty special, I think, and shows what kind of guy, amazing guy he is.
So yeah, if you stuck around till the end, then clearly you've enjoyed this episode. Come and check out our whole archive of Gab and Jules Meets, where we have similar type conversations with, man, everybody from Sami Khedira to Zlatan Ibrahimovic to CONCACAF president Victor Montagliani. There's a whole bunch of them there, and we enjoy them because we enjoy talking football.